just got the popcorn.
This thing had better have hot guys or cool science, otherwise I'm out of here.
Wow, she kind of looks like my ex.
Damn it, Rod. Now I'm going to be sick when she gets naked later.
Hey, hey, and welcome back to Movies in the Buff, where we strip down, objectify, and thoroughly violate your favorite movies. Here's your royal team of debauchery, lovely Lisa.
Royalty can go piss in a pot.
And crazy Carl.
Fuck, shit, can't think of anything to bloody balls say about this damn shit movie.
Oh, you so should have finished that off with Camp Town Races. Anyway, and of course, Sexy Scully.
Do you know what the F word is?
Fornication. Anyways, and tonight we will be reviewing The King's Speech. Let's see here. The story of King George VI of Britain and his impromptu ascension to the throne, and the speech therapist who helped the unsure monarch become worthy of it. Let's see, top-rated review on The King's Speech. Being a big fan of British history, period films, and Colin Firth probably put me in the target audience for this film about King George VI and his speech problem. However, I do not think of this film as a limited appeal to people over a certain age or history buffs. It may not be for those who need a steady diet of car chases or violence, but for those who are willing to see a good drama now and then, with an open mind, The King's Speech is an exceptional story about a royal historical figure who had to persevere like us commoners must do in certain aspects of our own lives, and to overcome obstacles that I'm really bored already. Let's just say The King's Speech is a good movie. Yeah.
And I'll go with the people who like this also like There Will Be Blood, Good Night and Good Luck, Quiz Show, The Flowers of War, Bobby, and Shattered Glass.
Is it sad that I've only heard of two of those?
I haven't heard of any of them.
I've heard of Bobby, too. There Will Be Blood, Good Night and Good Luck, and Bobby I've heard of.
Yeah.
Anyway, like and dislike segment. Scully, I gotta hear this.
Does The King's Speech make you wet or frigid?
Yeah, actually, no, it makes me wet. I mean, even having to sit through the actual speech at the end, I thought that was actually really more moving than when you had to hear it all the time in history class, like actually getting to go through that whole personal experience. By the time you are actually listening to the speech afterwards, you are actually very moved by it, more so than the first time you heard it in World War II history.
I didn't actually, I was not familiar with this particular speech from history class.
Oh, you didn't have to listen to it?
No, I didn't. I don't believe so.
I think it
seems like I've heard it before. And it while I was listening to it in the movie, I was like, this, his voice sounds like I remember hearing it.
Amazing job. That was really the biggest portion of this was every audio, like from listening to the audio recording and listening to this, he's not exact by any means, but
He's
so good at it. Yeah, he's got a lot of the inflections. He's got a lot of the speech tics manner. Well, clearly he has to go through this entire actor, you know, change to be able to pick up all of these speech tics and everything. But the pauses are all in the right place. It's very, very, very well done. He definitely had to memorize the hell out of that.
Yeah.
All right. So, Carl, hard or flaccid for The King's Speech?
I give it about a 3/4 staff.
Really? I really expected more than that from you on this one.
No, I liked it. There wasn't anything I really didn't like about it, although at times it seemed to drag a little bit for me. But and that's simply I don't think there was anything necessarily wrong with it. It's just that movies of this type I tend to feel them dragging a little bit in certain places. And this one was no exception, but it didn't really detract from it a whole lot.
Fair enough. Okay, Lisa, wet or frigid for The King's Speech?
I was a little moist. I did enjoy it.
Now, I am going to say, and this is going to pretty much shock everyone involved, but I was extremely hard for this movie. I loved it. I did. I don't know why, but I did. I loved it.
It's just such a good Sunday movie. Sit down, like, you're actually wanting to pay attention to it, or you want something that is a good enough storyline that you don't feel like you have to be, you can fall asleep and not feel bad about it.
What's really funny about this movie is, like, I turned it on, and I guess probably, like, I had to stop about 35 minutes into it due to some illness that I've been fighting with most of the week, and then had to rewatch it again last night. So, it was on probably 15 minutes after I started it again, and I had to get on Wikipedia and start looking up the monarchy, and I went from literally the beginning of the English monarchy to the current House of Windsor.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I had to really trace this family lineage and where it, you know, all of this started.
So basically, you were researching my family tree, is what you're saying?
Well, you'd like to think.
Anyway. No, I'd like to know.
Anyway, now I have a question, Carl. Is your family tree related to the House of Windsor, or?
It is related to. It's related to the House of Windsor, but not directly. It's actually. Let's see. Trying to remember exactly where we come in. Henry VIII's brother is that's the brother. Yeah.
Now that's from the House of Tudors.
Right. And but the House of Tudor is related to the House of Windsor.
Yeah, through some weird set, yeah.
They're all related.
They are all related. Right? And
what's really funny is the House of Windsor is actually a German house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the name was changed during World War I because of the anti-German sentiment.
Right. But yes, the House of Windsor and the House of Tudor are share a lineage. And I know that there is a relationship between my family and the House of Windsor. I just don't remember exactly what it is. But I know I'm related virtually directly descended from the House of Tudor.
And here's the thing.
We should be asking all of these questions to Yagavas when he's on next.
Oh, God, yes.
On top of that, I really, really do at one point want to have enough time. I really do at one point want to have enough time to do a historical podcast. This isn't it. No, so, moving back to the King's Speech, let's go to our scene by scene, and of course we start out with the obvious, you know, him getting up to speak and can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
The painful, painful,
yeah, that was horrible.
Painful intro to this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that was actually, for being an intro to a movie, that was the most painful in a storytelling kind of plot turning way. Like, not only is it driving home the plot, but you're actually physically cringing, like, oh dear God, just say it. Mm-hmm. Please get it over with.
Who felt like King George V trying to watch him speak in public, though?
Yes. I mean, you could absolutely put yourself in his shoes.
Yeah.
During the scene.
I really never have had that problem. I've never had an issue.
Well, see, to me, just watching this, though, I mean, I could feel his pain.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting little historical note to this movie in the trivia. After the abdication of both the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, they were generally surprised and dismayed that they were to be banned from the United Kingdom, never to return.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yep.
Also, apparently...
I missed that, sorry.
Apparently, this movie also featured two Death Eaters from the Harry Potter films.
Yep.
Actually, there were a lot of people from the Harry Potter films.
Well, there were two Death Eaters. There was Helena Bonham Carter, and I'm looking at him now, and it's Timothy Spall.
Yep.
But I'm looking to see who it was. Oh, he played Wormtail.
Yep.
That's right. Oh my God, he made a good Winston Churchill.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That blew my mind.
Yeah.
And now to know, because I didn't recognize him as being Wormtail, and now to know that they're the same person, I don't see it. I still don't see it.
I do. All I see eye squints.
Mm-hmm. All I think about is this character from Sweeney Todd.
Mm.
And but I also had to point out the Academy Awards for this film: Best Actor, Colin Firth.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Lots of nominees. Best Writing Original Screenplay, Best Director, Tom Hooper, Best Picture. Mm-hmm. Also, it won the Golden Globe for Best Actor, Colin Firth.
Yeah, and I would like to point out...
Nations.
Yeah, I would like to point out that if this movie had not been made the year it was made, Inception would have swept the Oscars.
Yeah.
Because it was, if I remember correctly, the Oscars, that year were The King's Speech and Inception, almost without fail.
Also, I just now realized that this is the birth of the meme, Stay Calm.
Really?
Yeah, look at the actual...
Stay Calm has been around since World War II, right?
Yeah.
has this story.
Yes. No, like, it's an actual old sign. It's, really? You know, stay calm and carry on. That was all it was stay calm and carry on. And that was the British motto throughout all of World War II. Stay calm and carry on.
Fair enough. All I'm seeing is this cover here, and it's...
That's where it comes from.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. Let's see.
As long as you don't think Underground was started by this movie, I'm good.
Sorry, I'm looking at trivia, and English or the British version of the MPAA, the BBFC, originally gave this
15 certificates.
Yeah, gave it a 15 certificate, so 15 and over rating. And when they for all the occurrences of the word fuck, and when they appealed that, they reduced it to 12A with a strong warning.
Strong warning because of all of the language.
Contains strong language in a speech therapy context.
Yep.
Yeah, but actually, it was more interesting knowing that he had actually, by the time his wife had, you know, found this, you know, one last person, one last try, he was completely like, I'm done with this. I'm just going to keep the stutter. It's not like I'm going to be king. It's not like anything bad is going to, he's like, I'm just going to keep going the way I have. He just had given up. And I'm sure in reality, the picture, the timeline between when he had given up and when, his wife, Queen Elizabeth, had actually, like, gone out and found this one last try. It was probably years between, but in the movie it was very, very short.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, he's like, I'm never doing this again. So she goes out and finds another
one. Blame him for not wanting to do it again? Somebody asked me to hold marbles in my mouth and read?
That was an old speech therapy tactic.
I did love the prescription.
They're idiots.
Tobacco smoke.
No, it works. It works in some cases. It just doesn't work in his particular case. It's for where there's actually a mechanical problem.
Yeah.
Yep. It's for muscle building and articulation so that you can actually figure your way around all of them.
Right. And his problem wasn't that he physically couldn't speak. It was that it was all psychological.
Yep.
They did it to my sister, but, you know, she still calls me Wad.
Yeah, well.
Anyway, interesting side note here again. David Seidler stammered as a child and heard George VI's wartime speech. As an adult, he wrote The Queen Mother and asked for permission to use the King's story to create a film. The Queen Mother asked him not to during her lifetime, saying the memories were too painful. Seidler respected her request.
Yeah, Elizabeth I.
Yeah. So apparently, like, this film is a lot of years in the making.
Yeah, he's been waiting on Queen Elizabeth I to die.
Yeah.
Queen Elizabeth I was like 17-something.
Yeah.
She's
No. Queen Elizabeth, wife to King George
VI.
Right. She is actually Queen Elizabeth.
You can't put first, if they're not an official
If they're not the ruler,
person,
yeah.
Yeah, if they're not an official reigning person, they don't get a number attached to them.
That's where my confusion is. Okay.
And I guess I should say Roman numeral because it's not technically a number.
Another interesting note here. Guy Pearce, the guy who plays King Edward VIII. He is actually 7 years younger than Colin Firth, and God did it show.
Yeah.
When they're standing next to each other.
Yeah, there were times when I went, wait a minute. How the hell is this guy older?
Yeah.
Yeah. You could kind of tell, like, the few times that they were standing next to each other, they would spend more time doing panning. Like, that was the huge kudos to this movie for doing such really good imagery and great setup for camera shots, was they purposefully put both of them in their own camera shot without the other one in it as often as possible so that you wouldn't
Didn't see it. Yeah, so you wouldn't see them standing next to each other going, God, he looks so much older.
Yeah, and it was a good thing that they only had a couple of scenes where they talked to each other.
Yeah. I also have to point out that the kings in this movie are played by an Irishman, an Australian, and an Englishman.
Yeah. And, which is
interesting.
I also got to give props to Michael Gambon for having now played both King George V and his father, King Edward VII.
Nice. Anyway, so... Okay, you meet the speech therapist, Lionel, and his really wacky tactics of... And I really, really enjoyed the back and forth between them at the very beginning, where he says, well, your family calls you Bertie, I'll call you Bertie. I'd prefer His Royal Highness. Yeah, I'm not going to do that. So, I mean, it was just, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. And you've also, you also got to give this guy props, because this was a guy dealing with essentially doing psychotherapy before psychotherapy existed.
Yeah.
And you really have to notice that. I mean, this is before Freud.
Yeah.
And he was actually doing a lot of things that, and you know, the fact that he was Australian really helped, because not an Englishman alive would be caught dead doing any of the stuff that he had done. They really wouldn't. It's just not, I mean, a lot, you sort of get the idea of how he's really, really abnormal in all of the other interactions with Elizabeth and George and everybody else in the family. You notice that nobody talks to them like this whatsoever. They don't even talk to each other like this. Like, this just doesn't happen. And the fact that, you know, the Lionel character will come up and just give him sass is something that sort of you don't really get and you don't really appreciate until almost the end of the movie, when you realize that he's the only person who keeps treating him like the same person his entire life.
It also, it wasn't just that they don't talk to each other that way. Nobody talked to royalty that way. Now, he might have been, if he had been just regular Joe, maybe, but not royalty.
Yeah. Also, I have to correct myself. This was not pre-Freud, but it was, you know, Freud at this point was still alive. At the point that this movie takes place, he was about to die, but he was still alive. So it was, you know, but he hadn't, psychotherapy had not caught on beyond, you know, its early beginnings with Freud. That was about where we were.
Lionel doesn't call it psychotherapy, but you understand that it is when he explains how he started doing this practice and the fact that he had, you know, he realized that all of these soldiers with post-traumatic stress disorder and shell shock all had these accumulated, these speech impediments and mental disorders, and he realized that the speech impediments are from mostly mental disorders.
Right.
You know, and he points that out with King George, like, when was the last time, when was the first time you noticed this? He goes, I've always done this. He's like, no, you haven't. No infant stutters. When was the first time you noticed this?
Yeah.
Interesting goof here. Prime Minister Stanley Baldwin in the 1930s would have been called Prime Minister Mr. Baldwin, not Prime Minister Baldwin, modern turn of phrase.
Interesting.
Yeah, only recently have we not called people by their proper titles.
And then Mr.?
No, I mean Mr. That's their proper title. You call everybody Mr. and Mrs. and Ms.
Right.
Like, you're very political. Correct.
But it's the it is very recent that you draw that, you know, the title that you're addressing somebody by replaces the Mr. as opposed
to
being added to it.
Actually, they really messed up a lot of titles in this one. Here's another one. In the conversation with Bertie after delivering the Christmas proclamation, King George V calls Joseph Stalin Marshal Stalin. Stalin was awarded the title Marshal of the Soviet Union in March 1943 after the conclusion of the Battle of Stalingrad, more than 7 years after George V died.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff where if you've been, and I noticed it especially with the when they were watching the Nazi campaign after his coronation. So it was awesome because I'm noticing, I'm like, oh my God, they got the real coronation footage and they actually like stuck it in. Of course, they edited the hell out of it because they didn't want to show up faces and all this fun stuff.
Right.
So they had gone through all of this work to make sure not to show everything off. And then they ended with a Hitler campaign, which was done at a completely different time, like much later in the war than the coronation of the king, like much later into the war. And it was obvious, both in video as well as knowing that was actually one of the far later campaign, you know, commercials that they had aired.
Okay, now wait a minute.
Uh-huh.
Give me the gist of what you just said again. I was reading something about the same situation at the same time you said that.
Yeah, they had mentioned that in the trivia that there were two different shots. One was of Hitler earlier, and the other one is of Hitler like five years later. I'm like,
four years earlier.
They chewed up a lot of the images to be able to put them together, but they kind of have to because this is supposed to be a storytelling, not a historical accuracy. We're not watching a documentary. We're watching a story.
Still, the historical accuracy in a lot of this, especially when it pertained to the royal family, just awed me.
The costumes are spot on. So
The personality base, I mean, is from detailed accounts of the people that knew them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could tell somebody did a lot of research into the actual people that knew the royal family at that time.
Which is kind of easy to do.
It's not difficult, but at the same time, it's not just somebody trying to make a film to get rich. It was somebody who really had a lot of heart into it.
Yeah.
But anyway. Well, so then, of course, you have the entire montage of the speech therapy situation, cutting back and forth to his Christmas speech, which cracked me up.
Mm-hmm.
And you find out that his brother, who is due to inherit the throne as soon as the father dies, not really well suited for it. Like, he's got issues, dude.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's incredibly well suited for American, you know, divorcees that really don't have any place in a royal... Never mind.
Yeah.
It was very strange, though, because of... and although it's appropriate for the time period, he very much, his brother, embodied that carefree, don't give a crap kind of period that had happened between World War I and World War II. The whole party it up, live it up, have fun, you know, that kind of personality, which was very quickly dwindling as the fear of going into another war settled in, and he just clearly was not willing to give it up.
Scully, you and I were in an argument yesterday about the comment that every monarch in history has always succeeded someone who was dead. I just found another goof in here that supports my argument. James II had to flee England de facto abdication in 1688. He lived in exile in France until his death in 1701. So I was right. He wasn't the first one.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry. Had to throw that one out there.
That's a line later on. I'm like, that's a line much later on.
That's but I just outread it.
So that, like, you just jumped everything. So his
that's all right.
brother, essentially, the father ends up dying. His brother clearly gets now the title of king, and he's screwing it up left and right, and he's about to get...
When the church and parliament say, okay, we're leaving you alone, you screwed up.
Yeah.
Well.
Okay, I have a question, since we're at this point. Was it Alzheimer's that was killing his father, or what? Because he seemed like
dementia.
Yeah, it seemed dementia, not...
Yeah, he had dementia, but it was tied to... But he also got incredibly sick and weak. All at the same time.
Yeah, because like, at one point during the scenes, he was talking about how he's so confused.
Mm-hmm.
And then he looks at his wife and said, have you been ice skating? What?
By the way, I was confused. I love the king with the talking to Bertie about the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And telling him, you know, you know, at one point all we had to do was not fall off a horse.
Now
we have to talk.
Yep. Now we have to go into our countryman's home.
Yeah. So. But that described me up. All we had to do was not fall off a horse.
And he was right. At one point in history, all they had to do was not fall off the horse.
Produce an heir. That was pretty much all of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that too.
Although I would call that the only thing they ever had to do was produce an heir. But, so his brother is clearly screwing up so badly.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Here it is. He was actually injured in 1915. King George was. When he was thrown from a horse during a troop review in France. And after that suffered from, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease and pleurisy. And in 1928, he fell seriously ill with septicemia. And for the next 2 years, Edward took over many of his duties. And they kept sending him abroad, from 1925 onward, they sent him abroad like 3 times, to the Mediterranean. And in 29, he refused to go abroad again. And let's see, stayed at a seaside resort in Sussex. And then, January 15, 1936, he took to his bedroom at Sandringham, complaining of a cold. And never left the room alive.
Yeah.
So it was mostly breathing problems.
Factual errors. At home in the company of their parents, Princess Elizabeth and Margaret were called Libet and Margot, respectively.
Although you never hear them addressed privately in their home.
No. Well, there's the one portion where the storytelling, but even then.
Yeah.
He wasn't actually addressing them. He was telling a story and used their names.
Yep.
Yeah.
Lionel Lowe never swore in front of the king and never called him Bertie.
Oh. Yep. Weird.
Yeah, I figured that was a storyline kind of thing because you need to quickly rush how these two people are going to become really fast friends. So you really have to like tie together.
But what bothers me is the fact that, you know, one of my favorite back and forth in this whole movie was all fake. There was no historical accuracy whatsoever to it. Yeah. It's disappointing. I'm over it.
Moving on.
Okay, so now you have him adjudicating the throne.
Yep.
Edward.
And you have George talking to Winston Churchill, deciding on his name, which was a pretty good idea, actually. And that's one thing. I mean, Winston Churchill spent 90% of his time fucked up on cognac, but had some great ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did an awesome job, too, with it, because it was one of those things where you sort of do a double take going, oh my god, that's Winston Churchill.
Yeah.
He walks onto the scene the first time, and I go, is that really? No, wait. Yes, that's Winston Churchill.
No, my favorite was the very first time you see him, he slides in from the right-hand side of the screen because Elizabeth is standing at a window at that stupid party in Scotland.
Yes.
And Winston Churchill kind of slides in so that his back's to the camera the whole time. He just sidesteps into the camera from the right, and he's standing in front of the window next to her, talking to her. And so the whole scene, you never see him, and you never see his face.
Yeah. Yeah, but
until
you
turn around to sit on the window seat.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's like, I wonder how good the guy they got to do this was. And then you finally see his face, it's like, he did a really good job.
Yep. I was shocked. And the second he spoke, I knew who it was. And then I kind of shot back to that old Robin Williams joke about how, you know, Winston Churchill was too fucked up to do most of his speeches, and they were done by a guy from the BBC. You remember that one, right?
Yeah, I remember that one.
Anyway, then I jumped back, and I'm like, man, they got some really freaking awesome actors in this movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, plain and simple, they're amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, anyway.
What's funny is I'm looking at a picture of King George VI, and it looks more like the guy who played his brother Edward
Yeah, it really does.
than it does Colin yes. Firth. Yes. Although but, they did a decent job of putting Colin Firth in him.
Yeah.
Although having Helena
Bonham Carter
play Queen Elizabeth I couldn't get the freak factor off.
I know, man.
What really bothers me is, you know, she was nominated for several awards for Best Supporting Actress in a Motion Picture, Golden Globe, Best Supporting Actress in a Motion Picture for Academy Award. I mean, she got a lot of different awards for this. And of all of her roles that she's ever played, I was just not impressed by this one. I mean, she did a decent job, but...
No, I was actually impressed that she didn't do something that was over-exaggerated and characterized.
But at the same time,
I kept expecting to hear her try the priest.
Yeah. Oh. I actually didn't have a problem with it because I didn't recognize... She looks so different in this that I didn't actually recognize her.
How could you not recognize her?
I didn't see anything spectacular about it. She did good.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Actually, I thought it was made spectacular in the fact that you're sitting here going, oh god, she's going to overact this character, but then she doesn't. She does a very straight, very good...
She does
a very good job. The first time you see her do, like, a very good, low-key character, and I have to give her kudos for that, because it's tougher to play these really high-end roles and then roll back.
Maybe. I don't know. To me, she didn't do anything special enough to deserve an award.
Well, you got to look at who beat her out for that award.
Who did beat her out for that award anyway?
Melissa Leo from her role in The Fighter.
Yeah.
Which we've also reviewed.
Yeah, and that sucked. Wait, Melissa Leo?
Yeah, I'm looking.
That doesn't even ring a bell at all.
I'm trying to remember which character that was.
When did we do The Fighter?
That was the one with Mark Wahlberg and Christian Bale. Melissa Leo played Alice Ward.
The mom.
Yeah, the mom of
Nikki. Freaky ass mom.
Yeah.
Drink everybody and let's move on. For the love of God, let's move on.
for that awful movie.
Hey, and Amy Adams also got the nominee. Also got the same nomination.
Amy
so
Adams. Things I would do to her. Anyway, let's move on.
Yeah. Yes, before Rod goes into a daydream again.
Another overshare drink. So at this point, we're having to deal with poor George having to deal with King George VI having to deal with the coronation fact. And let's face it, he's pretty much at this point developed a fear of public events. Not really a fear, but
maybe not a fear of public events, but I'm thinking it was a fear of speaking in public.
Yeah. Oh,
he has a fear of speaking to people. Mm-hmm.
I was actually very, very impressed by his ability, Colin Firth's ability to act the stammer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, without it
hokey or overdone or, you know, that was impressive.
Yeah.
That definitely takes a couple of years trying to learn how to stammer. It takes you years to unlearn it. took him longer to learn it.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I loved the whole scene of him finally introducing his speech therapist to everybody. And
oh, yes.
And calling him a doctor. And he's like, I just didn't correct you.
And the entire argument about how, you know, they're not. And, of course, this is the one part that really bothered me about this movie is, like, during the time, from the time he goes from Duke to King, they have this whole falling out between him and his speech therapist, and oh god, the bromance is ruined. Let's get it back so that we can have the whole rom-com idea.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, that was a little unnecessary.
It was a very drama. I think it was very much a storyline pull to sort of show, because at this point, the Lionel character was, you know, it had done its part, and it needs to show that the Duke going through this transition to King really has nobody to turn to. He's very isolated. He doesn't have anybody who carries on this conversation. Mm-hmm. And you need to sort of get that loneliness sensation of being stuck on a high pedestal with nobody to talk to and nobody to help you, really.
Yep.
So then Lionel comes back in and you realize that they pick right up where they left off. They're really good friends and they go through everything just as if nothing had happened. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just seemed unnecessary.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and
definitely necessary if you want to really pull off how, like, you really have to play with the manipulation. It's that sort of, okay, they're really, really close friends. Now the absence will show you just how he has nobody else to go to. He really doesn't have any other friends, and then drop him back into the storyline, and you realize just the real importance of that friendship.
And then we have the throne.
Yes. The one, I love the fact that he points out the fact that it's got graffiti on it. I'm like,
People you do realize have carved their name on this.
That thing sat in the back of that church as, like, just a junk chair for hundreds of years, which is why it's got all the graffiti on it, and they didn't realize it or bring it back up until, you know, the modern, once the position of king had really been, all of the power had been given over to Parliament. That's when they found, they were like, oh my god, this is the chair, this is the actual throne, we need to get this out of here.
Yeah.
Yep, smooth move, people. Smooth move.
I have another interesting note about Helena Bonham Carter. Strangely enough, there are actually two different movies that were up for Oscars at the same time that both had Helena Bonham Carter in them.
Yep, Alice in Wonderland was the other one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. which was a great film.
Yeah. Really? I don't remember her in Alice in Wonderland.
I also want to point out that this director, Wait. Tom Hooper, mm-hmm. she was Red Queen. But this director, Tom Hooper, also is the director of Les Miserables.
Oh,
nice. So,
I have not seen that yet.
I haven't either.
But there's a reason that it's up for Academy Awards.
Yes. Cannot wait to see it. But moving on with the storyline here, obviously they have their whole big get-together, mm-hmm. their return of the bromance. And
they do what, and it was so, this, sorry, I was like, this is like the best actor. If you've ever done any acting and you've had to do, and this is actually a fantastic exercise, when you get stuck in an area that's got poor acoustics and you're having to go through lines, there is always, your director does this, and it was so funny watching Jeffrey Rush do it, because I know Jeffrey Rush has had this done to him about a million times. You're standing on stage and your director just runs to the back of the stage in every awkward corner they can find and is like, you know, yell your line at me. Your grandmother who's hard of hearing. I swear to God, if I have to hear the next director say, your grandmother who's hard of hearing can't hear you back here, I'm going to say, you know what? My grandmother's dead.
No. You know what it makes me think of all the time? Close your eyes and imagine that you're standing in a Vegas nightclub. You know, people are smoking, talking, waitresses are wandering around, go, what are you going to have? I always hear Whoopi Goldberg doing that scene from Sister Act.
Uh-huh. No, I've always, because when you do acting, that's what you
I know.
Stop doing. You're always stuck standing stage, yelling at your at the top of your lungs.
It always pops up, the scene from Sister Act 2 for me, where she's like, would Shaka Zulu scare anybody with that?
Are you both like?
And I always think of when I was at work, we had to shout our orders, and the people could not hear me, so they started saying, okay, yell it to the boss. She's in the office. Behind a closed door, the boss can't hear me. I got good enough they could hear me outside.
Anyway, then of course you have Bertie's confidence again. Mm-hmm. And once that confidence is really firmly put in place, it's finally done with the test of the wartime speech.
Yep. Which they have, like, what, 8 minutes to prepare?
49.
9 minutes to work with, yeah.
Yep.
I thought it was 40.
Oh, yeah, no. Well, no, they had 40 minutes before it went, and then they had 20 minutes before, because apparently it takes him 30 minutes or so, 20 minutes to get from his place to, although there was a bomb, which was really freaky.
Yeah, there was an air raid siren, there was people in the road. Yep. That could make sense.
Yep. So it did take him a while.
You know, and I can't help but think we really should have followed this movie with V for Vendetta, but anyway.
Although we've got to put V for Vendetta on the list.
Yes, with no other reason than to make me watch it.
Oh,
you haven't watched that yet?
Nope.
Oh, yes, it's
one of my favorite movies of all time.
I know, and I still have never seen it.
Okay, so we're getting that on the list for sure.
Yeah.
As soon as it comes on streaming.
So anyway, basically, I mean, that's the end of the movie. You have the conversation with Elizabeth, and it's over.
Yep.
There is one thing I'd like to mention at the end of this, because it's part of my awards. He goes up to his daughters and asks how he did. The eldest daughter says, "You were halting in the beginning, but then you did better."
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So with that, let's move into best buffed, and Lisa, I guess you could just go first.
Okay, this gets two. One for the one I just mentioned, which is Daddy's Little Girl. People, they even did it with the inauguration this year.
Yep.
Barack Obama's daughter says, "You did it! You didn't mess up!" And then King George's daughter did it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got Doc Fuckass's Tourette's Award.
Boondock Saints.
Oh, I love
it. Thanks for Boondock Saints Awards.
Yep. I love the cussing scenes in this movie, mm-hmm. though. It cracked me up. Anyway, okay, Carl, go ahead.
We're giving the I'm Not Marla Singer Award to Helena Bonham Carter for finally not being fucking crazy in a role.
Okay.
Seriously. When was the last time she played a role where she wasn't fucking nuts? You find it in
this one.
Yeah, before this one. Find me one. Find me one find me one that comes in between Fight Club and this.
Well, she was kind of creepy in Fight Club too.
Yeah, exactly. That was when she started being fucking crazy. And Tim Burton's what, Rod?
Bedroom.
No, she's still fucking crazy.
Well, how sane?
How would you know?
Tim Burton. I mean, how fucking sane would that make you?
Yeah, good point. Really?
And how would you know she's still crazy?
So anyway, any others?
Because she's married to Tim Burton. And no, that was the only award I gave this one. It got enough awards in the Oscars.
Fair enough. I
deserve them all.
Scully?
Yeah, no, all of my awards are just the ones that they got from the Oscars, because it really was fantastic. It was a great watch.
Damn it, this is bugging me. I can't find one.
What?
A movie where she wasn't fucking crazy.
Exactly.
So, I didn't mean to, like, I'm, like, looking through her call list and nothing.
Yeah. Let's see. Fight Club. No. Sweeney Todd. No. Harry Potter. No. Alice in Wonderland. No.
We were looking at, like, Big Fish, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing. Okay, so I'm sorry. Do you have any other awards, Scully?
I had none to begin with, so no, I'm good.
If you can find a movie.
I apologize. That was bugging. Okay, so as far as my awards go, I'm going with the award for Best British Bromance Ever, or at very least since Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. And I am also going for, due to the accuracy of the actors and the characters that they played, in history, I'm giving this, and I'm sorry that I have to use such a crap movie for this one, but I'm giving it the Face Off. It's like looking in a mirror, only not. Anyway. And those are my only two awards for this one. Unfortunately, I mean, for as many awards as this won in the actual award ceremonies, there weren't a lot that you could give it. I mean, you just can't make too much of this funny. Now, granted, Rod's rant is coming up, and I plan to, but that's beside the point. All right, so moving on into buff quotes. So I'm going to start with Scully.
All right. So this is actually a conversation, and I'm not doing voices because I don't feel like it. please don't smoke. I believe sucking cigarette smoke into your lungs will kill you. I need to relax. My physician says it relaxes my throat. They're idiots. They've all been knighted. Makes it official, then.
And as she's doing that, I'm smoking.
Yep.
One kind of in bad taste because he did die of lung cancer.
Yes.
two, he actually asks for a knighthood at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on. Lisa, what is your buff quote?
I don't care how many royal assholes have sat in this chair.
That's a gross thought.
Yeah, there were some non-royal ones that sat in it, too.
Yeah. Gone.
During the plague,
God. Anyway.
There's a lot, right?
Moving on. Carl.
Well, I had to throw in a few so they knew it was me.
That actually sounds like something you would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And speaking of sounds like something one of us would say, my buff quote, fuck, 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 and fuck, 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 and bugger, 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 buggerty, 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 fuck, fuck, arse, balls, fuckity, shit, shit, fuck, and willy, willy, shit, and fuck, and tits.
Dad, are you okay?
I love the ending there. Oh, and tits. Yeah.
And tits, because we can't not say that. Yep. We've got to give everybody attention.
Maybe this should go with the 7 words you can't say on TV.
Yeah.
I love the buggerty, buggerty, buggerty.
Mm.
That cracked me up. Anyway, there were so many other great lines with the cussing, and I really had to choose between this one and one where I got to sing, but I went with this one.
So. Thank you. Actually, the most painful part is watching them prep for the speech,
mm-hmm.
the war speech, and it's like, here, listen.
He's singing it.
He's singing it and swearing and, like, he's
dancing
the entire thing, dancing around. I'm like, oh my God, I'm laughing so hard and crying at the same time because it's so horrible watching somebody who has to say the most moving speech in in British history and in, you know, I'd even say in world and global history.
When he was giving that speech,
and
he's Lionel in the off the camera mouthing the words the cuss words at him.
Yep. Even George VI, you can watch him and he mouths them between sentences. It's painful to watch, but it's great. It's the best moment.
I don't know. I kind of have to take exception to your most moving speech in English history. I've got to put it up there against We Will Storm Them on the Beaches.
Well, yes.
Also shot at the same time, though, wasn't it?
Well, similar time. It was later. Well,
of course, there's We Happy Few, We Band of Bugger.
Yeah. Which is from the same speech.
No, it's not.
We Few, We Happy Few, We Band of Bugger.
Okay, guys.
Yeah. A parody of that speech, though.
Alrighty. I can't claim British history in a New Yorker.
Yeah.
So, moving on. Were you playing with your Willy time? Carl, find out if we were playing with our Willy.
Alright, let's see. Okay. In Lionel's, in Lionel's waiting room, there is a picture, that is an ad for the Sydney Opera House. What is
AU
the writing
is
on the ad?
AU, Australia's calling.
Yep. Actually, no, you've got it wrong.
Yeah, it has the Sydney Opera House on it. It says Australia's calling.
You're close.
Look at me.
Rod?
I'm out.
Okay, I'll give it to Scully. It actually says Australia's calling you.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Interesting note, that's another goof, because the Sydney Opera House they didn't start construction on the Sydney Opera House until 1950.
Yeah, no. That was something that stuck out very badly.
All right. What's your next question?
Let's see. All right. Let's see if somebody can beat Lisa to this one. According to the advertisement, what is Bovril?
A flu resistance.
Oh, God, yes.
Close enough. It's a flu treatment.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Nice. So, Lisa.
Next to that flu sign, there was another sign. I think it's pronounced Gold Age.
Gold Edge.
Okay. There was some numbers at the bottom. What were they and how many?
It was the number 2 9 times.
Carl got that one.
Because I could hear you, and while we had that pause while I was writing down the Bovril question, I could hear you. I could hear you under your breath going 2, 3, 4, and so I started counting the number 2s written on it. So I knew you were counting something, and that was the only thing in that scene to count.
Okay. When George and Elizabeth were going into Lionel's office, or at least I think this is the correct part. Mm-hmm. Part. Sorry. You see a license plate once. What is the license plate number?
Oh.
Oh, Knew I should have wrote that down.
Yeah, I should.
It was like 691 GSC.
I have no idea.
Scully?
No, I don't remember it.
BT6368.
Yeah, I knew it. Like, I looked at it, and I just didn't have time to get the pause button to write it down, because I was going to make that as one of my questions.
Alrighty.
So, at the moment, it's a three-way tie.
Yep.
We each have one.
Yep.
Except for Rod.
Yep.
Mainly because I was dealing with Ireland at the time.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, so, Scully, questions?
Yeah, whose face is on the shilling?
George V.
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought that was awesome. I was like, oh, that's kind of freaky and really unnerving.
Yeah.
Your dad's face on the shilling. and my other question was... I'll go with the harder one. So who was it who recommended Lionel to Queen Elizabeth?
Oh, what was her name?
I know her first name. I don't remember her last name. I'm going to go with Edith Goldridge because I cannot remember her last name.
I remember it was a female.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I actually don't remember much of the first 30 minutes of this film. To be honest.
Benadryl on it, like.
Yeah, that's pretty much the problem.
What was the name?
Eileen McLeod.
Eileen McLeod, okay. I knew it started with an E.
Alright.
Eileen also starts with an I. Okay,
so yeah, I was going to say, this one was with an I.
It's pretty much guaranteed that I'm not going to win this, but here are my questions. Or did I skip over one?
No.
She asked for her. Okay. So here are mine. How many place settings were visible at the royal dinner scene during the death of George V?
The Red Room?
10.
Damn it, Carl. How did you do that?
Because I remember there were 4 people on the side.
On each side.
Right, which makes 8, and one at each, and one at the head and one at the foot. That's 10.
Yep.
Actually, that wasn't it, but yeah, there were 10.
Yeah.
Because there were... See, there were 3 on one side. Visible, there were 3 on one side, 4 on the other side, and then 1 at the head.
His mother.
Yeah. Or something like that.
Anyway.
But I counted each plate. Yeah. Anyway, okay, so what branch of the English military did Albert serve in?
The Royal Navy.
Yep, that was an easy one.
Yep.
I was looking for the actual... Like, I wanted to find out what the actual medal was he was wearing, but...
So tell me who is
surprised
by our winner.
Yeah, Carl.
Wait, can I make a joke about one of Scully's questions now, or is it too late?
Go ahead. We'll see if it's funny.
Well, I was just going to say, I was. It occurred to me earlier, but if your father's face is on the shilling, does that mean you have to give a dime?
Ha ha ha!
Oh my God, Carl! Really?
No, I came up with the joke when she said it. I was just holding on.
It wasn't funny when she said it, man.
Yeah, fuck you.
You should have kept holding that one in your pocket.
It was
yeah. Okay, fair enough. All right. That wasn't even...
But I'm like Colin Firth. I don't want to carry my father around in my pocket.
Wouldn't blame you.
All right.
Anyway, okay.
Audience
questions. Carl, go for it.
Okay, all right, I'm actually going to throw a bonus one, so you can get either one of these right. First of all, what was Lionel's son reading at the dinner table when you first meet his children?
For the record, it wasn't Garfield at Large.
No, it wasn't. And this one, you don't even have to watch the movie to get right. What award or what title did Birdie confer on Lionel after the end of this movie?
Yes.
Wikipedia. All right. So, who was second? Was it Lisa or Scully?
It was a two-way tie.
Was it?
Yeah.
All right.
Who?
Lisa.
Sorry, your mic cut out. What is Lionel's address? Not the number, just the name.
Well, the name of the street he lives on?
Yes.
Or the name of the street he has his office on.
I think it'd be his office because that's where you see them the most.
Yeah, it's his office because that's the only one that's referred to.
Yep. And you can also see it once.
Yep.
Was it 221B Baker Street?
No, it wasn't. I know what the name of the street was.
Two places, actually. You see it on a giant street sign, and you also see it on the elevator?
No, he refers to it at one point.
Yeah.
All right. Scully, what's your audience question?
What is Lionel's favorite play to quote from?
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. And as for my audience question, and I'm sorry, audience, I can't be nice every week. I need you to list all members of royal family pictured in this film.
Ooh.
Yes.
Ooh, that's rough.
That's not that bad.
It's not hard. It's just...
It's not easy either.
You have to list it. But anyway.
Here's a tip. Go to IMDb. And then, even more fun, go get their full titles. All of them from Wikipedia.
Nice.
They've got a lot.
Yeah.
All right. William is ridiculous.
So anyway, and remember, answering all questions gets that $25 iTunes gift card.
Actually,
huh?
I haven't checked. I didn't check today.
Wow.
Hold on.
I forgot.
Let's find out if they get the iTunes gift card.
Take the quiz. Test your knowledge of Helena Bonham Carter. I'd rather not know Helena Bonham Carter.
It's still up for grabs.
It is still up for grabs.
Yep.
So it does get that $25 iTunes gift card. On top of that, answering any questions will get you mentioned on the air. So remember to email the answers into inthebufffilms@gmail.com. And that email address can also be found on our website. So moving into mental debuff. Scully, would you like to debuff first?
Yeah. This is definitely the movie to watch when you just want a story to watch. You don't want to watch action or special effects or anything like that. You want to see a very beautifully staged, well-costumed, eloquent, written story. That's really it.
Okay. Lisa, mental debuff?
If you're tired of watching things like Triple Dog or Heathers or Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, feel free to watch this and it will help you tremendously.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Carl?
Gotta say, this gets top marks as a period piece. It gets high marks for it gets high marks as a drama. It gets top marks for, you know, based on a true story. And it definitely deserved every Oscar nomination it got. And yeah. I mean, I don't know that I necessarily would have, I don't envy the Oscar people this particular year because it was up against some really stiff competition in every category. So, you know, I'm not going to second guess them as to whether or not it deserved the awards, but it definitely deserved every nomination.
All right. And I agree with everything all three of you just said, but that's not going to stop me from ranting.
So. Not much else.
We're going to go and take time out while you do the Rod's rants.
All right. I wanted to hate this movie. I wanted to tear it apart in my rant this evening. I wanted to say, fuck you, snooty award shows. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Go take an acid-covered dildo in the glory hole. Fortunately for this film, I loved it. I can't say a bad thing about it. The acting was superb. The writing was remarkable. Hell, I didn't even have a single complaint about the photography. My God, can it be that the modern era produced a director worth more than piss and shit that was not surnamed Whedon? Bravo, Tom Hooper, bravo-fucking-o. And to top it all off, this film is mostly historically accurate, right down to the actor portrayal of famous historical figures, such as Winston Churchill. And by the way, Timothy Spall, fucking amazing! So if you need a historical bromance the way only the British can bring you, then it's The King's Speech. And if you've not watched this, you are depriving yourself of the very essence that is this film. And if you still won't go watch this film, then go fuck yourself, you uncultured little shit. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is Rod's Rants.
Nice.
Scully's
okay. I'm just like.
All right. Oh, before we stop recording, we do have a couple of things to mention.
Yes. Yeah. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone.
Happy Valentine's Day. May love you. May love find you in the buff.
So. Happy Valentine's Day, even if love doesn't find you in the buff.
And I'll just go ahead and say what I thought Rod was going to say, and happy Valentine's Day. May love find you long time.
Hey, love can find you in the buff no matter what.
There's a lot of things that can find you in the buff, but...
Right.
Just so long as it's not your parents.
Well, you have
to... Or your cellmate.
And?
And also, we want to say happy birthday to Yagavos.
Yep.
Who will be on the show in a few weeks. Two weeks.
Yep, two weeks.
Two weeks!
He is now a 19-year-old little British man that is absolutely hilarious if you've not gone and watched his show, or listened to his show.
Yeah.
Go listen to Initiative Check.
Definitely and, Initiative Check. And yeah. Tadpoolery.
And Strength, well, Tadpoolery if it ever comes back.
If it ever comes back, yeah. Initiative Check is a pretty decent show.
Nudge.
Yeah. And I just have to point out that, you know, Yagavos is now turning 19, and has anybody other than me noticed the alcoholic content of his show has gone up significantly over the past year?
Yes.
The alcoholic content of his blood has gone up in the past year.
Yeah. I think
happy
the blood
birthday,
content
Yagavos,
of his alcohol has
hell.
Gone down.
Well, we love you, you little British drunk bastard. And I hope you're having a great birthday week. And beyond
I thought
that,
I'd be a Brit who could drink more than Terpster.
Okay, I'm not even going to go there. next week we do have Hugo in the buff.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I feel really wrong saying that, but really wrong. But
it sort of makes you feel like a pedophile, doesn't it?
Yeah, it kind of does.
It's better than the next week when we have zombies in the buff.
Where's the buff?
Yeah, no, ladies and gentlemen, that is not the Spanish zombie porn, no matter how much it sounds like it.
It is actually a movie about zombies from the point of view of the zombies, so that's going to be awesome.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I haven't seen this one yet. Have any of you guys?
I've seen it.
Scully?
I think I have a long time ago. I just don't remember it. I'm sure if I go look it up at IMDb, it's going to be like, oh, yeah, no, I've definitely seen that.
It's really dry, and the top star is the guy that plays the intern in Bones, the blonde-haired kid.
That is not ringing a bell, considering I don't watch Bones.
I'm trying to remember which one that is.
The one that plays hockey with Booth. Anyway.
I think I know who you're talking about.
But before that, we do have Hugo next week, and I'm not even sure what this movie's about. But you know what? I'm looking forward to it because
it
this
won
week
some was, awards too.
It did win some awards, so
yeah.
But I can't tell you what it's about. So just join us next week where we'll completely break it down for you. Until then, keep watching those movies in the buff because it's just better that way. Good night, folks.
Night.
Night.
I'm gonna go get some jelly babies now.
That's all, folks.
Hey, Buffers. Don't forget to check out our new website, moviesinthebuff.com, and like us on Facebook and Google+, or follow us on Twitter at moviesinthebuff. You can also follow your team at debauchery, me at Rod the Golden.
At Scully44.
At Kith Kanan.
And at Acorna Witch.
You can email us at inthebufffilms@gmail.com.
Movies in the Buff is now also available on Stitcher Smart Radio. Find out more at Stitcher.com or download the app today.
Movies in the Buff is distributed under a Creative Commons
Attribution,
Non-Commercial,
No Derivatives,
3.0 U.S. license.